beginning to look a lot like Boogaloo! Welcome back, everybody, to season 4 of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. This is Holiday Damned. Oh, yeah, we are enjoying ourselves some holiday movies and relaxing, getting in the spirit of the season. Oh, yeah. So this time we've got ourselves some Santa Claus. And that's with a C-L-A-W-S. We were super excited about this one, especially after the great Rupert gave us some warm, fuzzy feelings in our heart. Well, Santa Claus did the exact opposite. Gave us a warm, fuzzy feeling somewhere else. But,
yeah, the cat in this one didn't dance or anything.
No. All right.
I'm a little deader inside because of this movie.
Well, it's kind of the exact opposite of the Great Rupert. Okay, I am joined as usual by my good friends. I got Jim in the house.
I'm thrilled. I can't wait to get into this. I want to dig deep into the subtleties of this film.
The subtleties. Yep. Really get into the mindset of
Did I say subtleties? The subtlety. I think there's only one extra level of this film.
Then. One extra level.
Overreach.
All right. Jackal.
Sup. Kittens. That's in honor of this movie.
Kittens got claws. Yeah.
Santa Claus. You know what? Who picked this one?
That would be me.
Yeah.
Eighth Dance. Stand at 2.
Ah.
There may be sanctions for picking this movie.
It was cute.
And finally, we got Nick Boxer, who apparently wants to sanction people for watching this movie.
Greetings and salutations. Yes, I do. I judge myself for watching this movie in its entirety.
You're just doing it for research purposes. That's how it's. You can explain anything that way. All right, well, speaking of Nick Boxer, why don't you tell us what this movie is all about?
Oh, about. That's a broad term.
Isn't it?
That implies there's a story here, but okay, I can do this. A little boy kills his mother and her lover on Christmas. And years later, he stalks a woman and kills a bunch of people that are vaguely in her life.
This is about a little boy who his mother tells him Santa isn't real, so he leaves his kittens out for Santa Claus to take back to the North Pole. Santa Claus, 2014.
I thought we should maybe check and make sure that we both watch the same Santa Claus film. And I... extra points to anyone who can pronounce Claus sufficiently that everyone knows that it's spelled with a W instead of a U.
Claus.
Let's say no. This is 1996. Santa Claus. Like, but that synopsis. Can you do it one more time? Go ahead. The whole thing.
All right. Little boy kills his mother and her lover on Christmas. Years later, he stalks a scream queen. I got that extra in there. And kills people vaguely associate her with her in her life. Stalks her basically and kills any possible connections to the outside world.
Kills people that have wronged her. More. Let's be specific here.
This is no. That's not the plot. The plot of this film is.
I knew this was coming.
The plot of this film is there's a story around a bunch of women who get naked, but it doesn't get in the way of the nakedness.
That's it. I would make the argument the story does get in the way of the. I was actually working on the theory that the director didn't want to make this movie. He just caught with a sex doll and didn't want to admit it. So he said, it's a prop for a movie, and then he had to make the movie.
Now, given the fact that it's John A. Russo, I think that he wanted to make this movie.
I know that now. Once I've researched it, I was like, holy crap. You know, John, this guy's made like real movies. When I was watching this, I was thinking like, okay, we got a guy with a sex doll, a bunch of strippers shooting in a storage locker. Okay, this guy just wanted to make a movie, I guess. I don't know what this is.
It's not a storage locker. It's the offices of the company that makes these movies. Like it's
in the storage locker.
Well, it's just their stuff. Like it's their warehouse. Like they didn't even go down the hall from their own offices to make this film. And so the movie within a movie, I'm quite fascinated by. So they're making a movie. What's the movie called? It's Scream Queens Christmas. Is that what they actually call it within the film?
I don't know.
They do say a couple of times, but none of us captured it. So it's Scream Queens magazine is making a Christmas movie, but it has this very vaguely defined plot. They explain it at one point that there's a bunch of guys that fall asleep.
Oh yeah, and they got to open the presents. Through,
yes. And their Christmas wish is to get women that come out of Christmas presents. So yeah. Periodically throughout this film, it switches back to one of the women who's an actress in the film, who's in the film within a film, and all she's doing is a strip show. That all of these scenes are going to be spliced together into the film within a film. It's about 15 minutes of the 75. It's just these strip scenes. So they definitely got their money's worth out of the strip scenes. What's weird to me is that's the plot. That's the plot of the film within a film. But they make it very clear that that's supposed to be a horror film.
Oh, is?
It's Scream Queens. Like they, yes. Like she makes horror. She makes TNA horror films. That's her character. So I spent this entire film trying to figure out
that what the character, based a character based on Brink Stevens. The character is supposed to be, in case you thought that character could have been anybody, you'd be wrong.
The guys don't just fall asleep. A magical snowman casts a spell on them. I wrote that down.
Oh.
so
they wanted to fall asleep.
Now the plot of the film within a film is making even more sense now as I add these details for you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, like I say, if you really wanted to fall asleep, you'd watch the film.
I can't imagine what you guys didn't see in this film. I mean, if we look at previous seasons, this film gets like six modifiers from previous seasons.
Yes, it does.
we've got naked women a minute into this film, and then every 5 minutes for the rest of the film.
True, but we had to wait a long time for the beautiful star Debbie Rochon.
You gotta build to that. I mean, you can't blow your load in the first 5 minutes.
No, she
was the present at the end of the movie, so that's
not sure this film ever blew its load.
She is the big star. They tell you at the beginning of the film that's where the term Scream Queen comes from, is about her.
Well, it's based on Brink Stevens, like I said.
tell us more about Brink Stevens. I actually don't, the name doesn't ring a bell.
No,
there was a comic book made about her.
Yeah, she's for like Scream Queen. She's up there as one of the legends. Absolutely. Like her name will come up. There's no way we can do Kung Fu Boogaloo podcast and not catch some of her movies before it's all said and done. Don't worry. It is impossible.
Yeah. This one, it's really interesting because really
the way to talk about it. Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
It's your thing you could say.
Because it's just like you're trying to think about all the things that you can say about this movie, and it always keeps coming back to the naked women, because the stuff that's
what
happening.
What else do you remember from there?
Because the stuff that's happening around. I mean, the whole reason that this part of the movie exists is because of Santa Claus and because of.
And, And they did make a real other movie, Naked Christmas, or Scream Queens Naked Christmas, two titles. Naked Christmas in North America. Scream Queens Naked for the rest of the world. They did make a real life video, basically. So they didn't want to waste that footage, you know.
Well, and really, that's just women. That's just good. That's just good. You know, recycling right there is what that is.
So, in the extra film that got released, Naked Christmas, is it the same footage that's in this, or is that camera actually running?
Because if that camera's running, it's actually not going to be very good footage. But
normally, here's the thing: that's John A. Russo, who was in the film as the cameraman who kept flubbing his lines.
Mm-hmm.
The director and writer, and yeah, like we say, he's, you know, the Crazies and Night of the Living Dead. He co-wrote that, like the legendary, one of the greatest horror films of all time, right? Like, and then he also did this.
Well, I think the one thing that we know after seeing this is that we probably knew it before, but we really know that George Romero is truly the talented half of that duo.
I think up to this point we can finally say that we have not been giving George Romero enough credit.
Yes. That is very true.
I was quite taken by the stalker plot of this. I mean, it's got some classic slasher elements. He stalks his favorite starlet, who also happens to be his neighbor. It's unclear which came first there.
Oh man, that just threw me right off, because he's like in love with her, and then the next thing you know, he's in her house, and I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah, and then so he's got the big altar to her. He's got he's ordered a life size bust of her that it's kind of half statue, half sex doll that he's ordered. He's got this giant altar. He's got pictures of her and everything. And then he walks outside and goes, "Hi, how are you doing, Raven?" And he goes over to babysit her kids. Unclear which one comes first.
Classic horror stuff, like you said.
Also, that I mean, everything else aside, that this dude is left in charge of her daughters is weird. this dude is not okay. He's clearly, I mean, sure, they say that he works for a school or something, or he works with youth.
He's a teacher's assistant, teacher's aide, or something like that.
If we're gonna go here, how can we not just talk about the opening? Because the leap of him being okay and being outside and taking care of children in a school setting has to come after we learned his secret origin at the beginning. And well, large leap going on here.
But he would have murdered them as a minor. So, you know, presumably those files get sealed. Doesn't come up on your background checks.
You don't just let them out. Like, they actually, I don't know if you guys watched the deleted scene that's the alternate opening. Because, okay, well, actually, somebody first explained the opening. Jim, you explained this opening.
So we got a young boy who's been, he's wakes up on the couch. He has been drugged. He goes upstairs because he hears his mom and someone upstairs. He sees Santa's clothing along the stairs, and then he goes into his mom's bedroom, and she's having a jolly old time with Saint Nick. The Saint Nick turns out to be the kid's uncle. The kid's father has passed away, and you know the mom's lonely, and Saint Nick has come calling. So the kid pulls a gun out of the drawer and kills them both.
Yeah, but he
and
was
it's done, and it's in like a it's a in a monochromatic. That's how you know it's the past.
Flashback. Yeah, it's the past because it was a flashback. Yeah, black and white monochromatic. Yeah, but the Santa he had drugged the kid to make sure he didn't wake up so they could have sex. He put sleeping pills in his hot chocolate, and the mother says, "You put sleeping pills in?" He goes, "Only two."
I think it was originally horse, like he said, horse tranquilizers, I think, at the start. And then she's like, "Horse tranquilizers?" And he said, "Maybe people tranquilizers."
Maybe, but he says only two, you know, and that's how many I want to take. But apparently, and she goes, "But he's only 14. Well, apparently he should have used four.
Yeah. Not, and it wasn't even close. The kid was asleep for like what, half an hour?
You know, well, we don't know. We come in media res. The kid is asleep when we come in. We don't know how long
do you think Uncle Nick is having sex with this woman, and then he shows up. Like, yeah, I mean, it can't be that long, right? So then he shows up, and you know, he pulls out the gun, and Uncle Nick, no, I'm as upset about him dying as you are, but life goes on. About your dad dying. He was my favorite character in the whole movie, I have to tell you. This guy is the most amazing actor I've ever seen in my life. Yes, then the ultimate, like, and then they just cut to him being out and being an adult and being fine. And I'm like, huh, you know, even if he wasn't convicted, he would be probably some sort of asylum for issues, I would think, especially given his behavior. But they had the alternate opening, and this thing, it goes on to show, again, John A. Romero playing the police officer, explaining that, yeah, this is so frustrating, you know? They could go ahead and kill some people, turn 18, and that's it, because they're minors, they're just out. Nothing you can do. And I'm like...
Nice. That's good work. That's good writing.
I love it.
That's not how the court system works.
That's how it works in John Russo's world.
But I tell you, it was the Clinton years. I figured that is how it worked.
That's possible. Yeah. I explain so much. This movie, but it does have that all the time. Like, this one thing about this movie is there's constant plot holes. And, like, they'll have a plot hole, and then John A. Russo, writer, director, and he'll write a long explanation later in the movie to why that plot hole was. But that explanation will cause two plot holes. Fix that. But now he's one behind. And then he'll have three. And then that will open up three plot holes. And now, it just keeps building. And he keeps trying to fix all these plot holes. And all he's doing is, it's like watching somebody in quicksand going, stop swimming. Please stop trying to swim. You're not helping yourself. This movie is something.
I like the part with Raven Quinn's husband, where, because he's the photographer who gets her into this business, and they've got the whole story about like him deciding that he's gonna leave her. So his mother and sister are mean to her, and
they're awful. They're just like the worst in-laws ever. They're just so mean.
And then for no discernible reason. And then he's off on the business trip.
We got a movie coming up where people are mean.
Okay.
Well, we're with this one right now. We're talking about why her in-laws are so mean.
Well, I'm just saying meanness, we should grade on a curve.
All meanness has to be graded on a curve. I mean, I'm not going to compare them to Django Unchained, but I'm just saying, like, they're mean in this, in the context of this film, like, unnecessarily.
But it's just such an odd character.
That was one of the ones, though. You're right. Like, he sits there, and they're going, he got her into the business, mm-hmm. but they're upset that she's in the business. Mm-hmm. It's okay for him because he's behind the camera.
Yep.
And so, like I say, this is one where he's one of those where he's like trying to explain it, but in doing so, he's just causing more and more holes.
Well, because the guy winds up, you know, sleeping with the woman that he's taking photos of, and he loves her, and he's like, oh, my wife is phoning. Like, why is she phoning? I don't want to talk to her. And then the next day, he's taking pictures, and his wife phones, and it's just like, you know, maybe I do kind of love her.
Yeah, but he says to the woman he's cheating on, the nude model who was very naked for a very long time,
for like a really super long time, yeah.
Very long time. He says to her, "You know, you're only my second," and she goes, "Really? Only you're like you're almost a virgin?" He goes, "No. That's not what I mean. I just, since I've been with my wife, you're the only other woman." She goes, "I don't believe that," and I'm like, "Neither do I."
I think he said, you're my first. And she's like, what, you're a virgin? Yeah. It's just like, no.
With those kids? And it's like, yeah, except two kids. Yeah.
There's really no doubt that none of the actual storylines, need to occur. They really are just there. I mean, I'm totally intrigued by the Wayne character when he decides that he wants to become the Santa
That's the
Claus.
Kid who killed. That's the kid who become. Yeah, yeah. That's the kid, Wayne. Yeah.
And the fact that, I mean, so he does all these random things.
No. He's copying the bad guy from one of her films. That's the thing. Like, all of those things are props from one of her movies. So he's actually recreating the bad guy from one of her films.
Right, but the Santa Claus part
that
isn't.
Movie does not exist.
Oh, and then he changes then he dresses as Santa for no discernible reason.
And he paints it black.
But then he changes back to dressing like that other guy. And then he goes back to Santa Claus. And in fact, later in the movie, they actually say to Wayne, he goes, "Wayne is gone. I'm Santa Claus."
I love that guy. He was just like, he was just chewing up the scenery. He was in it to win it. This is the only movie he ever made. I love
him.
He was a stage actor, apparently, and a fairly well thought of one. And then he made this movie.
Because you know, there's no question. He owned that part. He made it damn well his.
This dude was method. He was into it.
There's
a great scene. Just the first time he babysits for the girls, and he's having to sit with Raven, and she's pouring her heart out about the problems she's having in her marriage. And the two of them are sitting on a couch, and she keeps like stretching and kind of like moving toward him, and she's like, just talking quite close to him. Is she into him at that point?
I mean, like, I'll admit, I would get the wrong signals from that too.
I could see him getting the wrong idea from that. She's like,
"All right,
my husband doesn't
understand."
I think
we have the cast for the sequel.
All right, let's get John Russo back and let's let's make some. He's only 79 years old. He can do it.
Well, he's still working.
Working.
And Debbie Rochon's still working. So, and it, the movie did end with everybody happy back together.
I know. So,
oh my! I there's so many things to go through on this film. Like, we can't. Like, I let's just get to the WTFs. Can't we just? Let's just cut to the chase here.
I've one quick question before we go to scoring. So he has his altar that he has made to his favorite scream queen, happens to be his neighbor again. Don't know how that works. If you guys were going to have an altar to your favorite scream queen, who would it be? You got to buy the giant statue like bust that's half statue, half sex doll.
You know what? After this movie, it'd be Debbie Rochon. Oh God, she's beautiful.
She really is, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Julie Strand.
Mm, I can see it, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good choice. You know what, actually, I got to go. What's her name there? Does Tara Reid count?
They all count.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on.
Anyways, Debbie Rochon.
Yeah, Tara Reid's got some, she'll have, I mean, like early days, Sharknado era, like which do you like?
No, Debbie Rochon is still.
Debbie Rochon.
I'm not changing for Tara Reid, please. Debbie Rochon's job was nowhere near as botched.
Stan, did you have one there?
I really don't. I don't know. I don't know that many Scream Queens overall.
I'll print you out a list and send it to you.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, I'm sure one of the names would.
I'm changing. I'm Bo Derek. Bo Derek. I'm all in. Bo Derek.
What would her horror film be that you could put her on the list?
Oh, it has to be a horror film? Shit.
It's a Scream Queen.
What the hell do you think a Scream Queen is?
They explain what a Scream Queen is in this movie that you just watched.
Did you see Ghost Can't Do It? You will fucking scream.
Well, that might be fair, but...
I choose Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and we will now move into the scoring. All right. As we search for the ultimate B movie, we rate every movie on 5 criteria, none of which are objective quality. The first category, never ever. The first category we have is called schlock appeal, and we start with Stan.
Well, this movie is highly schlocky and occasionally appealing.
Yeah, about every 5 minutes, something was appealing.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Oh man, what's a good number for this one? I'm going to give it a 6.
Yeah, you know what? I won't go that high. 5. I mean, it's got the boobs. It's got the kitschy name. It's got a killer in a Santa suit, but nothing to write home about. 6.
Wait, I'm not going to go that high.
None of those things are worth writing home about.
No. Okay. Hey, not on the Boogaloo scale, they don't.
Look, this film is it's not very appealing at all, but the schlock is so high that it's one of those, it's a movie that it's like mesmerizing. Like you can't turn, it's car crash quality, right? So I got a 7.
All right. And you're all wrong. This is a 9. This is amazing. Like how can you brush off that it's a killer in a Santa suit using a hand rake from a backyard garden to murder people? And that's just that's something you see every day. How schlocky is that?
We're not a crazy concept.
That's the schlock to me. That's like that, you know. I mean, he spray paints the clothes are spray painted.
I do love that hand clearly has no sharp, like the rake that he's nothing sharp at all on the edges. They're rounded and they look almost soft. Nothing. They would never. You would not think that couldn't cut through a paper.
Now, I don't know if you guys have ever handled one of those things, even if it was sharp.
That's what I'm saying.
It would hurt. It wouldn't be all that effective.
Well, you'd need some real strength to actually do a lot of damage with that.
Like ever get a shot
if you attach the stick to it, and
I think you'd have to put it against it, and then you'd have to really lay your hand on top of it. Like I don't think you could just do a spiky motion with that. I think you'd. I don't think you're.
and yeah, it would take a lot of, and it's not heavy, but you know, you would, if you hit somebody too hard with it, you would break it. So you got to be careful. and there's no shot of it entering somebody. It's always a shot of it already on somebody's skin and a bunch of blood around it. You're like,
I think, you know, and not for nothing, he's ruined the resale value of that prop by using it. Yeah. You know, if you invest in a screen use prop, you got to take care of it. All right, our next category we call More Heart Than Budget.
I'm going to go with Linnea Quigley, by the way. That's going to be
on my, if you know, yeah. If she had actually made any horror films.
Made it to the short list, though?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Her scene in New Year's Evil where she, okay, we can't talk about it because it's one of the great WTFs in history of film, but in case we ever do that movie...
doing that at the end of this season, so yes.
No, New Year's or New Year Christmas Evil or yeah, we're doing New Year's Evil. This was Christmas, I think.
Jack, are you have you been like, you know,
is that Black Christmas? Is that the one you're talking about? I don't know which one you're talking about. Anyway,
one from 1984 that she was in. Oh man, I'm still pissed at one of you guys for not picking it for this season.
You had a full, you had a great opportunity to pick whatever the hell you felt like.
But make no doubt.
You were pissed at us for not picking a Hear No Evil, See No Evil. No. Oh, God.
Richard Pryor one?
Yeah. Yeah. We've officially gone off the rails. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I just said Linnea quickly. I thought that.
Stan, get back into it.
Okay, more heart than budget. All right. Well, shit. I mean, there's definitely no budget.
That's fair.
I think it's a nickel, and I don't think there's much heart, but I'm going to give it a 6. Actually, no. You know what? I'm going to give it a 7 because they turned it into another movie.
You know what? I would have given this a 2 if I didn't watch the deleted scenes or if I didn't watch the background features. And the background, the interviews and stuff, these people wanted to make this movie. I was shocked.
Oh, yeah.
I was shocked that anyone involved in this movie was liked making this movie. I'll up it from a 2 to a 4, but that's as far as I'm going. This is just an excuse to show naked women.
Oh, you know, shit.
Well, yeah. That's the thing about this, right? Is it literally like it's made for. I think a nickel might be definitely, and they had a loan out on that. To get that nickel, like it is even like high school, like special effects and shots and everything like that. It's like brutal, even though Johnny Russo's a DP that's done a lot of fine work. So it's really tough because it's like on the one hand, they like David Rashawn's like, well, I thought this really represented Scream Queens were at the time, you know, with fans and everything. And you're like, really? Like she's seeing all this stuff in it. And on the other hand, it's just about showing naked women. They're like, we have to make this other video. Let's just shoot a movie around it and sell it twice. So it's 5. Like it's right in the middle. Like I can't decide. It's either 0 or 10. So it's a 5.
All right. Well, I went with a 4 on this. According to IMDb, I do not know the source outside of that. They say this is a $40,000 budget.
Wow.
My ass. I'm calling bullshit on that one.
Did they? Oh, no. I've got it. It's $40,000 budget because they paid the rent on the building for a year with that money. So that makes sense.
Everybody working on points on this movie.
I can't imagine the craft services would have been all that ulti on this thing.
The hot chocolate they were going to give the kids.
Yeah. I think that bag of marshmallows, there's no second take for that. They could only use the marshmallows. They only had enough marshmallows for one take. Everything else was for lunch.
It was what was right. Left on the craft table when they were done.
The next category we call what the fuck moments.
Do we ever?
I mean, the biggest what the fuck moments I thought were the attempts at story in between the nudity. That was my, it was like, wow, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you doing this? Yeah, and him like I can remember is him like painting the Santa costume black, but I wasn't actually sure what he was doing for quite a while because the scene actually took like 2 minutes for him to paint it black. It's like
every scene in this movie could have been done in 30 seconds and instead went 3 minutes. Every single scene.
But yeah, I think that like there's just so many scenes that keep getting extended, and of course the fact that the family was so mean to her really because there's no characterization. I don't expect characterization, but then when they tease you with a little characterization for Wayne, you think, okay, well maybe they'll give you some. And then Debbie Rashawn's character Raven, she's actually trying to explain her life and that kind of thing. But
she's trying as an actress.
But then you've got this family who hates her, and there's no explanation of that really.
No, there is. Don't you remember they said to her, she even said this to her, to the other girl. She said that their family hates me. They treat me like the movies I do are one step above porn films. And then the next scene, she's explaining to Wayne the movie, and she goes, well, there's no real plot. It's just a bunch of guys want naked women coming out of prison. I'm like, I don't see how her family could have an issue with them being one step above. Where are they drawing that conclusion?
But the number one one for me is the fact that at the very beginning of the movie, they have a news reporter explain it, like, behind the scenes of this with the director of the movie talking about it. And he brings up Raven's character, and he's just like, hey, Raven, tell the camera what you went to school for. She's like, oh, I have a master's in zoology. Like, oh, okay, of course.
This will never be important again.
Yeah. Yeah. And it came up once more in that she's just explaining stuff, but it was given the fact that it occurred so early in the movie.
But that reporter, though, in some degree is them literally going, we hear your complaints before you've even said them.
Yep.
About how making a movie to have naked women with almost no story around them. And this is that we're going to just explain our point of view ahead of time. You can turn off the film or not. Now with the reporters out of the way, here comes the nudity.
And that's pretty much
what that thing is.
Yeah. And then the nudity happens while the reporter's there. It's great stuff. Great stuff. I'm going to give it an 8.
All right.
My favorite WTF was the horrible Foley. There is one scene in here where he's stalking his prey and eating an apple. And all you can hear, I mean, you could hear him crunching this apple from across the freaking street. Most movies wouldn't even put that in. Like, wouldn't even bother putting Foley on the apple. But no, this guy is really eating this apple. Even like key lines of this movie are folied in, like I'm Santa Claus as he's running up the stairs. You can tell he's not speaking. The Foley is so bad. Yet it seems to be included unnecessarily. So yeah, I'm going as high as a 7 on that one.
Oh, dude. Man, I wish I wrote these down now. let's go. Okay. How about the fact that the first time you meet the family, she's sitting there going, you should really stop making the movies. They're complaining to her. And she's sitting there with the kids right there, and they go, how do you think these kids would feel if they opened up one of these sleazy magazines and saw you spread naked right there? And I'm like, well, if you think they feel bad, maybe don't say that right in fucking front of them. Like, you can't sit there complaining about, her when you're just later in the movie when they show back up, the kids get drugged by Wayne, sleeping pills in their hot chocolate, you know, callback, you know, to the opening scene. And and so the dad shows up and he calls the doctor and he tries to wake him up. And then he calls his mother because he has to go save Raven. So he never calls the police. Because he certainly wouldn't want to do that. And so the kids have been drugged. So he calls his mother and says, can you come over and look after them? They've been drugged. And she goes, where's Raven? And she goes, I don't know. I think she's on a film set. And there you go. Her mother goes, well, I'm not surprised. She's always saying bad stuff about us. And I'm like, the kids have been drugged. Maybe this is the time.
Now
you want to talk to yourself.
I'd like to defend the family for a second.
What?
Our star was describing in graphic detail to her children what some of the fans do. I don't think she was appropriate with the children at all.
Showed up, it wasn't really that bad. She, like, they had a crazy fan. What was it? The crazy fan wanted her to sign something. I can't remember what it was. It wasn't really that bad. You know, they don't know. But yeah, all they know is mom makes movies, but I know more thanks to grandmother. But yeah, how about the fact that grandmother's more worried about what she says about herself than the kids have been drugged? So the guy shows up at the place, and he can't get inside because there's somebody watching the door, like some security, and he's a photographer, and he goes inside and he's like, "What? Well, can I see some ID?" The security guy, and he shows him his ID. And he's like, "I practically work here." And the guy's like, well, just the money. And I'm like, the whole time, I'm like, well, how the fuck did the Santa killer guy get in?
Like, security tightened up right after the Santa killer walked in. Well, the Santa killer has a key, though. So does he come in the back door?
When does he get? Okay.
He got a key when he went in earlier, and he killed the director, so he has his keys.
So they're in this warehouse where they shoot these movies, and there's a scene where they're shooting with this naked woman on a bed. And then later on, she's like walking around, and Santa shows up. And this time, it's not a black Santa suit yet. It's Santa, and he's like, "Oh, I'm looking for this address, but I can't find it." And she's like, "Well, I can't open the door. I don't want to let anybody in when I'm up all by myself," as women usually are when they're just hanging out at warehouses naked at night. They usually just sit there by themselves in case somebody else shows up to photograph them. And and he's sitting there, and he's like, "Oh, come on, I'm Santa. You got to let me in." And she's like, no, I shouldn't. He's like, "Oh, come on, I'm Santa, blah, 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 ho, ho, ho." And she finally opens the door, and he's like, "Ah, I got you." And he grabs her, and she lets out a scream. And in mid-scream, during the same screen, clearly the same screen, the next shot is them landing on a bed, which means that the bed that they had was literally 3 feet from the exit to them.
No, the bedroom.
You missed
that.
You,
was at
wait,
her
wait.
Home.
It was at her home. Like, you missed like three minutes of the movie then.
Yeah.
She comes home. She feeds her cat. She has a shower.
Bill thought that was the warehouse.
No. Okay. That was totally the house.
She follows her home.
The front door then is her bed is then right in front of the front door of her apartment. That's even worse.
I think you should watch this movie again.
Yeah, I think paying attention to it wouldn't hurt.
Apparently.
Are you telling me he doesn't grab her, and while she's still at mid-scream, the same scream, end up from her front door, then to the bedroom where she lands on the bed?
I thought it was gross.
No, he picks her up. So he picks her up and carries her to the bed.
It's not a different scream. It's the same scream.
once again, I'd like to discuss this movie again with you once you see it.
Fuck off. All right, I'll prove I've seen it. All right. So
I'd never heard a number there, though.
All right, fine. So the big one. Get to the big one, then. There's always a brand new Christmas. There's always a brand new start. There's always a brand new Christmas when you keep Jesus in your heart. He kills somebody. Takes them in the car. Kills two people. He's dragging them now into the woods in the snow while they're wrapped up in some sort of, I don't know, it was like a carpet or something.
They look like sheets.
Sheets, whatever. And there's this Christmas song, really happy and bouncy, about Jesus and Christmas and this and that, as he's dragging them in. Happiest song, like, wise. Then you listen to the lyrics and they're like, "Man, I didn't believe in Christmas. Then my mom died, and now I do." And it's like the least happy lyrics, like the most depressing lyrics to this like religious Christmas song. And then when you watch the credits, written by John A. Russo. So say, and I demand we put that song in this episode. And I know I've already looked. It's not out there, so we're going to have to grab it from the movie. But it's worth it. It's unbelievable. That is a 50. That song's a 50 out of 10 for a WTF.
Does he sing it, or is it playing on the car radio?
It just says written by. No, and you can't find anything about this. But it's like the happiest song with the most depressing lyrics. And then there's other songs that are like this, like that they put in the soundtrack. They're like really religious. And I'm like, they clearly had no idea this was going into Santa Claus and Naked Scream Queens. All right. I think there's more, but I'm good. Nine. No, eight. No, nine. Right. Nine. Going on. I was going to do it now. Nine.
All right. Well, Nick had mentioned the weird sound of this film, and there's weird Foley. There's weird additional dialogue that they add. It's called ADR. There's one bit that it's really late in the film. It's at the end of Raven's dance number. So there's been a camera assistant in other scenes who, for some reason, is not there in the final scene. Probably he wasn't allowed on set when the actress playing Raven was going to do her nude scene. Only John Russo.
She said in the interview that there was only supposed to be three people on set, but when she showed up, like 20 people there. So
that's awesome. So, but he's, but there's no, the camera assistant who just vanishes. Like, he's there every other scene, kind of comes in, tidies up, and then leaves. He's not there for this one, but at the very end of it, like, as she's leaving, and the camera guy is like saying goodbye to her, they've added this weird overdub of another voice saying just random stuff. That has no connection to anything. So,
and that, again, that's John A. Russo.
So John A. Russo is the camera guy, but they've added this extra voice that says...
No, but he's also the extra voice.
Oh, he's also the extra voice. Yeah. Says, I have to put the reflector away. That's one of the two lines. The other one is, let's put those cables out of the way then, so wouldn't want anyone to trip over them.
They were trying to make it seem like a big budget by making.
Yeah, they're just like trying to expand the feel of how many people are around by adding a random voice. I also love that John Russo at the beginning of that scene says, "Okay, I'm going to lock off the camera on a tripod so we could do this dissolve thing," and then immediately shoots everything handheld. Never doesn't use it. He's like, "All right, I'm just going to lock this off on a tripod," and there's no cut between the two of those. He just starts shooting handheld.
You know, he said in his interview for this that he's proud of all the work he does. People look at his films and think they're small budget, but think they were actually a million, or they're small budget, but they think they're $1 million.
In this case, we thought it was a nickel.
I'm giving this an 8. All right.
There's always a brand new Christmas. There's always a brand new start. There's always a brand new Christmas when you have Jesus in your heart. 9.
You're making a compelling argument. We call the next category.
We got to put it in. Who's doing the edit on this?
Well, if you give me the song, then I'll put it in.
Well, it's in the movie.
Yeah, memorable. Screw you. You ask for shit all the time. It's like, just fucking take all of it, man.
Actually, just, I say at the end of this episode, just drop the entire movie's dialogue in. Without the nudity, it'll be so much more exciting.
Well, the episode will come up a little short if we put in only 75 more minutes. All right, Stan. Memorable moments. Make it happen.
Man, I'll tell you, if I remember anything other than the nudity in even like 2 weeks, I mean, I watched this like 4 or 5 days ago, and there are things that Jack is saying, and I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, that girl in her apartment with the cat, I forgot all about that.
In the warehouse, remember?
No, it was not in the fucking warehouse. but needless to say, and I did double check that you're right, it is a tad odd, the cut between him picking her up in the kitchen and immediately dropping her onto the bed.
Fair enough.
It is odd, but you're still
they have that kitchen in the warehouse.
You're still wrong about the
warehouse. It's nice of them to put a whole apartment for her in the warehouse.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, somewhere for the cat to stay. It's good.
And the fact that, while I was at it, I checked. And so the killer does open the front door with his keys. He comes in the front door. But I think when cameraman husband comes, he winds up knocking. So that has to knock. So somebody has to go and open the door. So that was
the neighbor doesn't work there. The cameraman practically does. So the, clearly, the one who would have keys.
The keys when he killed the producer earlier, in the beginning of the film.
When the director shot him point blank, and he just shrugged it off because he had Kevlar on, because that's not how Kevlar works.
All right, so I think
it was a Christmas miracle.
I think that we have totally proven the fact that none of us actually remember a damn thing from this movie properly.
Yeah, I'm definitely dropping my score. Yeah.
It's a 1.
I'll give it to the 2. I might remember a breast or two.
Well, the other women I'll remember, the sort of, but maybe Debbie, she's so beautiful. that her, and by the way, she's had a lot of movies before this and after this where she was way more naked than she was in this one. So I actually want to see naked Christmas, or because I'm hoping that the good stuff is in that one. Cause this is for her a fairly clothed, like it's only topless, but still fantastic. I'll remember that. Three.
All right. Three. I'm going to remember the star turn of
whoever played
Grant,
Wayne?
Grant Kramer as Wayne, and how he was robbed of the Oscar in 1996.
Won that year.
Two. I'm going to give it a two.
What won in 1996?
Who won?
Best supporting actor.
Supporting actor? Would he get lead actor? It was supporting actors. No chance. I'm going to think of it. I'm. No, that was the year. That was your Fargo one. I'm going to go with Steve Buscemi in Fargo, and I like, it's just, you know, someone else look it up. All right, our last category. Our last category is called Crazy Concept.
Crazy Concept. Well, I mean, to me, the idea of a guy fantasizing over over like the Scream Queen / softcore star isn't really that crazy. The fact that he's killed his parents, you know. I mean, these are dealing with some relatively standard story concepts. The fact that they just throw nudity in and kind of write the story as they go, that's also not very crazy when you consider our movies. I'm giving this a three.
Yeah, two, and I'm just giving that for the novelty of using such an ineffective killing tool.
It's honestly, it is. I mean, you even said it earlier yourself, Jim. It's like, this has a lot of stuff that's like standard, legendary stuff that's for these type of movies, stalking and this and that, which actually brings it down. That's obvious. I got a two.
Kevin Spacey, by the way, for The Usual Suspects.
But that was the ones in 96. That's it'd be the ones in 97.
Oh, 97.
Of 1996, oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I had made it that far, too. And
the best supporting actor, Steve Buscemi, 1990. Oh,
no, it's
1997.
Best supporting is Cuba Gooding Jr. for Jerry Maguire. Oh. So in that case,
it is definitely bullshit. Yeah.
This guy definitely needs to.
That's what I'm talking about. Two is what I'm giving this as well. It's 55 minutes of story to wrap around all of the boobs.
nice boobs, though. Boobs.
Oh, they're fantastic boobs.
Not. You will hear none of us fault the boobs in this. All right. Every season we have six secret modifiers. This film has. Are we gonna consider the Jesus song a carol for this film?
No, it's not a traditional carol.
Well, a festive song, but does he actually sing it? That's what I couldn't discern. If it's only played in the car, part of the soundtrack.
I don't believe he sang it. I think that it was somebody else.
He's not singing it with their music going on while he's dragging a body through the woods.
That would seem odd. Yeah, that would seem strange. Okay. Festive song sung by characters on screen is what this we had made that modifier. So I'll stick to the ruling of the judges. So it gets two secret modifiers. It does get a bonus for only being 75 minutes. So it's well under our 80 minute limit to get the bonus one there, and it does get a minus one for being what we're calling this season a white Christmas. Having no actors of color at all in this entire film. Bringing it to 48 out of 100.
Do you think the kids in this movie have seen it yet?
That's a great question. There's one moment that I missed, and it's the kids are drugged, and everyone, and like both times you come in and the kids have been drugged, one of those kids looks like she has been caught in an explosion. She is just splayed completely, like starfished across the couch with one leg up on the back of it.
I like that they're drugged, So he leaves the house and runs across the street and is banging on the door looking for the... I'm like, dude, don't leave the drunk kids.
They're fine.
That's the point of them.
They've been drugged for safety.
All right.
I love
48,
it.
You said.
48 is what I said.
It did. Right. It did. It was fine. It was fine. Fine.
Right down the middle. Right down the middle.
There you go.
Wrap up. $3 on this fucking movie.
Oh, I liked it.
Okay. Well, it's all good because I know we're gonna change up our luck when we talk about our next movie, Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny. That will go back to the happiness and back to the fun, because it's Santa and an ice cream bunny. How could anything be bad about that, right? All right. So anyways.
The silence is telling.
Why don't you tell the folks where they can find us on the internet?
All right, well, the best place to find us is on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, and use the hashtag Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And otherwise, our podcast sponsors, We Talk Podcasts. You can go to their website, wetalkpodcasts.com. They are also on Facebook and on Twitter, and they'll keep you up to date on all of our episodes.
Okay. Well, like I say, next episode, we're doing Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny. So look forward to that one. It's got some craziness, I'm sure. And anyways, unless anybody else has something to add about the good movie Santa Claus that we watched, a little snick snick action. We're trying, giving it the good run. But anyways, for Jim, for Jack, and for Nick, I am 8th Dan Stan and New, and thank you for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
I have to drop a couple things off that I've already gift wrapped.
My mama tried to raise me right. She taught me how to pray. She told me how the Son of God was born on Christmas Day. But I grew up and left my folks. I forgot their homespun ways. I started treating Christmas like just another day. But there's always a brand new Christmas. There's always a brand new start. There's always a brand new Christmas if you feel it in your heart. I took to singing country songs that brought me wealth and fame. I love pretty women and fancy cars and things too bad to name. But sometimes in the middle of the night I'd wake up feeling sad. I didn't have the comfort of God that the folks back home still had. But there's always a brand new Christmas. There's always a brand new start. There's always a brand new Christmas if you feel it in your heart. When Mama lay dying, she said to me, my son, you brought me shame. If there's something missing in your life, you've only yourself to blame. She didn't make it through the night. My life.
about Eric. Wayne is babysitting the kids, isn't he?
You're telling me to the screw.
I'm begging you. Please don't do this. I'm your friend. Wayne, please.